Hi, Ralph.
Hi, Donnie.
It's great to have the time to really catch up, say hi. You know, I just wanted to acknowledge you for something that I haven't acknowledged for a long time. Remember, we were in the SRI Wellness Education Program, I think it was a few years ago, several years ago, and you looked at the picture, the chart I had, and at that point, you pointed to the energetic intelligence, and you said to me, "This is the center. This is it. This is what you focus on. Everything goes back to this. I know about this." And tell me, you know, you're putting it almost as an aside. You're building up into it. I'm telling you, Donnie, this is where the future is, looking at these energetic intelligence that seem to organize the field, that organize the energy, that organize the matter, that organize one's life, so to speak. You know, and it sounds like the song on Passover that sung. And that would have been enough. That would have been enough, and keep building it. But I really want to acknowledge that, and so many other things, and also your help over the years with me personally, in helping me model what we're doing, and helping me realize the nature of the importance of the field of culture and everything. And your exquisite thought process really has been tremendously helpful to me, even when you don't see me. We're not hearing it still is integrated into so much of what I think and do. And your Courageous Mosaic book, really talking about your journey, and which includes, and thank you, includes an SRI session, the gates, the whole variety of material, the blogs you put on that also mention your experiences, the work we have, and you just. I want to thank you for all those things and more, and for yourself.
Well, thank you so much, Donnie. And as you know from my Courageous Mosaic, you played a very important role in my development. I started with organizations and systems, and then focused more on the individual life space. And that's where I learned so much about energy, healing, wholeness. And now I'm bringing that back into organizational systems in a new way.
Well, how does someone go who's 30 years as a University of Pitt instructor, correct?
Well, it was always a hunger in me to incorporate more and more of the universe in my understanding of everything. I was always transdisciplinary, multidisciplinary, interdisciplinary. I always had a problem being locked in a box. And so my educational pursuit was always to broaden. And even though I was at a business school at the University of Pittsburgh for 30 years, I always spent time in other departments, other colleges at the university, learning, soaking things up, where I must say most of my colleagues were content to just stay narrowly focused within their own specialty. And as you probably know, the more education you get, the more you have a set of blinders, which severely limit what you can see. And I always wanted to counteract that.
Well, did you, if I remember correctly, Ralph, you started with your PhD was it behavioral science?
Yeah, behavioral sciences, social sciences, but applied to management and systems. So there was always the systems part of it, and I did my bachelor's and master's at Carnegie Mellon, which was also heavily into systems. But it was at UCLA that opened up the door to self-awareness with my experiences in T groups and counter groups. And the professors, if I showed them my work, they used to say to me, "But how does this represent your struggle in life? What are you pursuing here in terms of a personal level?" And that was not a typical question you would hear in the academic world.
No. That's probably, you know, Ralph, you know, we have, as you know, we have many gifts that we give, and one of the gifts that transcends any profession, it transcends the jobs, it transcends everything, is really the gift of how your presence creates instability in a system with new energy to be able to reorganize higher. And many gifts, but the one I see to you is one of peeling away a veil of illusion between dimensions. On every aspect, you know, not only peeling it, but let me say it differently, helping individual or group to peel away the illusions or whatever separates them from the next level of truth.
Yeah, I would say so. And if I had to suggest what is probably the root of all that is my fantastic traumas. I had a magnificent set of traumas growing up, which really led to all this, and that's why I'm so thankful. So that really created me, because that got me exploring the universe to figure things out. And as a result, I wound up being able to do things in a much broader scale.
So now, one of the things that an article that was published in January 2015 was an article on the seasons, and it's called the seasons, which were of well-being. I call them really sacred seasons. They really provide the energy to fuel the organizing wisdoms in many ways. But one of the things that, I talked about is a journey that's pretty similar in many ways as your journey that you talked about in Mosaic, looking at different people. And many of the people in that particular journey of understanding life from a transpersonal or beyond the rational mind or the non-ordinary experience realm. When I went, as I'm writing that paper, I'm looking at how similar many of the pieces as where you went through. You went through a lot more depth of them personally in your discovery, but from the holotropic breath work to the multigenic fields, like subconsciousness, you know, the whole variety of different things you've worked with. But in that, I talk about transpersonal vigilance, and basically that those people who feel they weren't protected effectively early in life or would not safe, so to speak, had to develop early in life, whether it be in utero or first few years of life, the use of their spiritual and energetic intelligence or resources, where most people would develop it later on in life after the sense of self really developed, and they find that doesn't do enough, and that people develop that, I call it transpersonal, because beyond the personal or the post-rational vigilance, because they're actually using that intelligence to be vigilant. Is it safe to go in this spot? Is it okay to be with this person? Is it, can I protect myself? And that those people happen, they're able to draw on those later intelligences and resources, but not in a necessarily mature way, still to protect themselves. And that the people who bring some of the greatest gifts to the world have had to have somehow, some way, either a serious wounding or a serious hunger established early in life. They had to resort to that because the culture and the mind wasn't enough to protect them. And, you know, it's obvious in reading your Mosaic and knowing you that you've made that transition not only to transpersonal or the spiritual vigilance, but the one that very few people really make, and that is that rather than being vigilant, use the soul to make you protective, you're using it to bring you gifts, not protection, but really using it to use the soul as a force of instability, so to speak, in a way to help people new opportunities. And, you know, not too many people, I think hopefully people get that about you, that, you know, you've gone that path from wound to gift. And the whole purpose of that was so you could help, you know, the gift that keeps on giving, and you're really a model of that. And you, key thing is, Ralph, you brought this into the how could I say it, the belly of the beast of business. And you know, you've been a consultant to White House administrations. 16 books? How many books?
A little over 20.
Over 20. Oh, my God. Wow.
But I'll tell you, a theme in my work, Donnie, is knowing how I got here. It is my hope that can we help people to be their whole self, whether they went through traumas or not, in spite of whether they went through traumas or not, can we do it
in spite of, that's right.
Can we do it easier way so that they don't have to go through the trials and tribulations? And even if they didn't have traumas, why can't we still jumpstart their awareness at a level where in the end they've come out way ahead of whether or not they had traumas or not?
You know, when I said trauma, the two models we speak about, one is the energy bound in the system. We have to find ways to liberate that, and that model is based upon still the model of the current economic, political, and healthcare system or disease care system, and the free energy model, which is a free available energy available at any moment in time. And in the bound energy, a person must have serious wounds to get serious gifts. In the free energy model, you must have a hunger.
Yeah.
And the whole purpose of the wound is to give you a hunger and help you look for different resources and find a new way. And hopefully, with greater awareness, people can be aware of hungers before the force of instability we call trauma without energy, because instability with energy is just growth, breakthrough, miracle. Instability without energy is trauma. And that people could actually not have to have the trauma. They could
exactly.
get the gift. And I think that's where I believe our lives really take that. We were on that same path, so to speak.
Absolutely, yeah.
Could you tell me a little bit more, you know, in right now working with developing and further advancing a typology questionnaire, predictive questionnaire, your questionnaire, you know, your Thomas Kilman instrument, the TKI conflict model, is one of the top models, one of the top questionnaires used in companies and corporate courage. I remember you consulted with us years ago and told me about the importance of corporate courage, and I see courage as going to save the season to transform and not discover, moving beyond discovering to transform. When you take action and you have enough energy to really impart to the field, as compared to CYA or CYB, cover your ass or butt. Instead,
yeah.
Let's make something happen. So I really would like to just give some insight into how, at this point in your life, you see your TKI conflict model.
Well, that model was developed just happenstance when I was very young in graduate school, and I worked with Ken Thomas, and we saw that conflict, at least that was a way of looking at things, is the heart of almost any conversation, any dialogue, any problem. It's when people have different needs, concerns, goals, and they have incompatibilities, so how do they get resolved? And this is basic at every level of analysis, within the family, in the community, in an organization, among nations. There's always different needs, goals, concerns, because people are different. But how are they resolved? And Ken and I came up with this model that has two axes. One is the extent to which you try to get your needs met when you find your wishes are incompatible with someone else's. And the other dimension is the extent to which you try to help the other person get his or her needs met, again, whenever there's some incompatibility between you. So on this conflict space of trying to get my needs met and my concerns met versus your needs and your concerns, we plotted these five different approaches. And competing is the approach when I'm just concerned about my needs, I'm not at all concerned about yours. Accommodating is I sacrifice my needs just so you can get your needs met. And compromise, we split the difference. Now, there's avoiding, where no one gets their needs met because we don't talk about it. We just walk away from the situation. And then the fifth one is called collaborating. And that sounds so ideal, but it can only work under certain circumstances. But collaborating is we both get our needs met because we come up with a synergistic solution that neither of us could have come up with on our own. But those conditions, there has to be trust, there has to be openness, there has to be candor. We have to be willing to share and know what we really need and want. The culture has to support it. The reward system has to support it. It's not worth doing if it's not something that's really important to both of us. So there's these 8 or 10 conditions that allow collaborating to take place. Otherwise, you're working with the other four modes. But the whole point of the TKI conflict assessment is to help people find out which of those modes do you tend to use too much or too little, or to realize that you have five available to you, not just one or two. That's the eye-opener.
You know, the exciting thing, you know, in so many, you know, it's interesting, as a person's internal, which as compared to external, means that my worldview comes from what I already know and makes things relevant to that. and going back to what I already know to be true, what's in my sense of self, it's my source of strength, and I build from that. So with this, as called internal, I hear you speak, and I go, yes, 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 and the mind starts racing and say, wow, the model we have of self and others, that, you know, in what persons try to change, is a person motivated by the way you experience change, I call the try to change, self or others, isn't that model. When you talk about the collaboration model, you're really talking about a person having a very energy-rich environment, and at least using the upper mental angelic intelligence, at least that, if not the solar angelic intelligence, so they can have a higher altitude executive function happen. They can use both sides of the brain, where this or that, mine or yours, right or wrong, is a lower mental angelic intelligence, and that does not allow for multiple perspectives. And what we're talking about is here, if I understand it correctly, when we talk about the collaborative, which is, I believe, part of the second tier that's happening in the world now that we're moving to, it really requires at least an energy-rich, not a super-energy. Energy-rich means that there's enough energy not only to organize yourself and to optimize your world, there's enough energy to pump into the field between you to inspire others, come up with more solutions. And part of that is having multiple perspectives. So I see what you're saying also as a reflection of the amount of energy available in the system, which allows which energetic intelligence and which function of the mind is available, the person's typology of how they experience the world. And the model of cooperation is just a really extraordinary model that really is, you know, there is no I in we. In that, and it's really exciting, because that collaborative model, I believe, is where the future is going to be. And now it's the bridge, helping people get to that point.
Yeah, let me emphasize that there are three diagonals on this conflict model where things really get exciting and fit very nicely with what you're just saying, Donnie. There's the protective dimension, which runs from avoiding to compromising. Okay,
so you're talking about season of discover, when you want to move away from something.
That is exactly discover. And in fact, that's where the first three stages of healing occur, is when people are, in essence, having to protect themselves, and, or if you use Wilbur's notion, it's very much egocentric. It's just I, me, mine.
Right.
And that's all the person can do at that time.
And the thing is, at that point, you just want to optimize their ability to do it effectively, correct?
Yes, but so often there's not much of a dialogue, because people are acting out of the physiological response
The pre-rational, you're really dealing with a person's response is probably before less than 5 years of age, even though they're an adult.
You're also often dealing with the sympathetic nervous system, where people are just taking care of themselves. That's all they can do. They really can't have a mindful dialogue either within themselves or with other people.
There's not enough energy to run the mind. They're hijacked. They're energetically hijacked.
Exactly. Yeah. Then there's the next is the distributive dimension, and that's a different diagonal. That runs from competing through compromising, through accommodating. It's the give and take. It's the zero sum. It's the either or. And people run up and down this distributive dimension. Either I get all that I want, or you get all that you want, or we get something in the middle. But that's all that life is. It's a compromise. And now we're entering with courage the transform stage, because now the dialogue begins. And we have to already be at a higher level of development, much more ethnocentric.
So Ralph, let's go back before. So that distributive stage, which speaking about at that point, that really is at that particular point, the individual has a. I'm correct. It's the hunger. It's a hunger that has to be filled. It's like a hunger that has to be filled. And it's either directed one direction or the other? Is that more like what it is?
Exactly. But the world is seen as either or, zero sum. The more I get, the less you get. The best we
can do
maybe is a 50.
So it's still a child there. You got more presents than I got. Yeah, but you got more expensive one. They can't get that. It's just that it's either or.
Each of us get something, because on the protective dimension, we both get nothing.
Right. Okay. You know, it reminds me of some of the concepts you talk about is the energetics of what is in Freakonomics. We speak about economics. It's not about money. It's basically how do you get what you want in the market, and when the competing forces, how does it happen? And this is a significant application of that.
Yeah, and people run up and down the distributive dimension, and they think that's the whole space. It's as if the size of the pie is fixed. And all,
right.
Think of this as energy, whereas when it's on the protective dimension, the pie is very small. On the distributive dimension, it's larger, but it's fixed, but we have to divide up the pieces. Now, when we move to the third dimension, that's the third diagonal, is the integrative dimension. That's where the awakening begins, that we can expand the size of the pie. Why does the size of the pie have to be fixed? And it's by enlarging the size of the pie, which is an energetic process as well as a mental process as well as an emotional process, and it's also a physical process, then we can both get our needs met. We expand things. We come up with things we couldn't have thought of before. That's synergy.
So let's go back to the step just before that, because I find that the phase transition between things like the most exciting of all, at that point, what we're speaking about here now is really the basis of the competitive model of a balanced system. It's
yes.
A balanced system. It's only
under
so much energy.
Under the dimension, it's absolutely bound. It's fixed.
So we talk about there's a bound energy, and that's where the financial stuff, that's business-wise. Someone writes a blog about your company, or product or service. You find a way to discredit that person or do something. You feel upset. Where at the next level, you'll say, wow, how can we make this a raving fan, and how can we find out more about a system? So what we're really doing, we're still in a conditioned defensive response, but now the response of the lower mind, this or that, this or that, whatever's on one side of the line is right, the other side of the line was wrong.
Yes, yes, and it stays, in a sense, ironically, even though a conversation is taking place, which is healthier than in the protective dimension, healthier in the sense if you've got options to become whole, but you're still limiting yourself to what's possible. You don't see the larger picture that's really there. You don't see the larger space.
Part of, an energy poor system that's collapsing no matter what, and you feel dread, and a person there just zones out because there's nobody there. They're in a state below that of like a five-year-old, regardless of whether they're an adult or not, and the system's collapsing no matter what. And the highest level they want is just to survive. Then as a person goes to energy neutral, and I think this is what we're speaking about, energy neutral, you have enough energy to survive, you can modulate small different things, and now the mind makes up stories, and this or that, right or wrong. And in that area, in that way, what happens, all of life is about effort. Effort, 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 but net, move back and forth, but no one scores a goal. In that place, because all the effort is on, what's the cause? What's the name? How do I name it? How do I fix it? Whose problem is it? Is it yours? Is it mine? And all of that, and the type of intelligence and the type of energy that looks at things that way doesn't have the capacity to resolve.
And
it just has the capacity to stay in the same wheel.
And the best you can do under those circumstances, Donnie, is to be 50% satisfied most of the time.
And that's what I call energy neutral. And the key thing about that, Ralph, I think it's really important, is that is the basis of our cultural conditioning. The job of that intelligence, of lower mental intelligence, the child, is really to help us be conditioned to our parents and our tribe so we fit in, because, the fish that doesn't school is called dinner. So that set of consciousness is our reflexive, reactive consciousness of our conditioning, and our parents and our culture are supposed to condition us to follow the way they see things so we fit in, because up to maybe 100 years ago, most around the world, people lived the same way for thousands of years, pretty much.
Right.
So we had to be conditioned that way before we ask big, bigger questions. So when you're doing that, you think it's even your response. It's not your response. You have your mother, father's, or tribe's unconscious response you're reacting to, and it's not even your choice. You're reflecting another choice, and in that, it's like a belief. You have to be reactive in a belief because you don't own it.
Right, right. Well, what I found fascinating, and I do this in my online course, I took four stage models and plotted them on the TKI model. There's many more stage models, but it was enough to make the point. And one model I used was a simplified Ken Wilber's model, where the protective dimension is largely egocentric, moves up to ethnocentric. As we move on the distributive dimension, it's largely ethnocentric, us versus them, what I have versus what you have.
And
then
lower mind,
moving
yes.
up the world-centric, spirit-centric, which is on the integrative dimension.
And then you get to the upper mind and to the soul, yes.
Exactly. And then I also looked at David Hawking's stages of energies and emotions, and they plot nicely on this model too, starting at the very lowest phase.
And power as compared to force, where earlier it's force, but once you get more collaborative with the third level, it becomes more power.
Right, and for the protective dimension for him, it would be shame, guilt, apathy, fear, grief, anger. Up until the distributive dimension, that's when we enter from ego force to spirit power with courage, and then reason, and willingness, and neutrality. And then ultimately we move up the integrative dimension with love, peace, joy, compassion, and enlightenment. But again, it plots very nicely, and those are the very energies that people express, the emotions, when they are living on the protective, the distributive, and then the integrative dimension. And then the third stage model I used was by a fellow named Donald Epstein, where I plotted, again, it fits very nicely, the protective dimension being the discover stage of the early stages of healing. The distributive dimension is, of course, the transform stages, starting with empowerment, which is very much like courage. I take my courage back. And moving up for there. And then the integrative dimension begins with the awakened stage, when we see emptiness and move on to the light and so on and so forth. But it plots very nicely. And then the fourth stage model I used was the very old one that comes from India, the chakra system, where the protective dimension is largely being radiated through the root and the genital chakras. As we move up to the distributive dimension, then we start with the solar plexus, ultimately the heart, which is courage, of course, and then ultimately we move up to the throat and third eye and crown chakra. But again, it makes the point that these three dimensions, protective, distributive, and integrative, and I wish I could show you the diagram, because these diagonals, one runs left to right, distributive is up and down the other way, and then integrative is again left to right. It shows you the shift in phase. It's a fundamental shift. It's almost a paradigm shift, moving from one of these diagonals to the other, which is exactly what's going on when you're dealing with discover, transform, and awaken. There is a shift, a fundamental shift in consciousness that takes place as people are able to see themselves and others on a different plane.
Ralph, I'd like to, when people, we're recording this and we're going to make this available to people so they can really hear not just you talking, me talking, but also the synergy, the connection of ideas, the emerging properties, because really what you speak about in the cooperative is really allowing new emerging properties to evolve, also another dimension too. I'd like to be able to have made available to people the chart you're speaking of so they could actually see the chart, and obviously with references to where they could find out more.
Right.
Ralph, I have a question here, and that is, how do you define really awakening?
Awakening for me is a gradual process that ironically takes place differently at different stages of consciousness. For example, some of the research suggests that the first sign of awakening is when you put a gorilla to sleep and you put a red dot on his forehead and he wakes up and you have a mirror there. And he looks at the mirror and recognizes it's him. And he tries to peel the dot away from his forehead. Whereas most birds, they peck at the mirror thinking it's another bird. So when do you first start?
Hold on, okay. That also goes against the same dimension. It's pecking your idea, my idea, this or that. But the ability to observe it at a higher order and participate with that observing.
Exactly. But some scholars suggest that the emergence of consciousness is at least recognizing a you, that you are you and you are different from the other gorillas and the other people and the other beings and other things. There are distinctions. There's distinctions. Now, that's very elementary. But from there, we move on to, you know, I also have emotions and energies. I have a mind. And then ultimately, I have a connection. And ultimately, of course, we're all one. And then there's unity consciousness. So the awakening takes place, ironically, along those stages of consciousness. And at the highest stages of consciousness, it's the awareness that we're all in it together, we're all one. The most profound statement I've ever had on the highest stage of awakening comes from the Mahabharata, which is the Indian text, which is kind of the equivalent of our Western Bible, if you will. And there's a dialogue with the queen and the king, and there's war now between the brothers, and they all want to kill each other. And the queen says to the king, because he just made a decision where he preferred his own children to the cousins, and that's part of the war. It's like Cain and Abel. I mean, it takes place in every culture. It's an archetype. But essentially, the queen says to him, when you prefer your children to other people's children, war is near. To me, that's one of the most profound statements. What would it be on this planet that we have the same regard for the children in Africa, the children in Asia, the children in India, the children anywhere as our own children? That is, to me, the ultimate of unity consciousness.
So that is really the shift also from world-centric to spirit-centric,
yes.
Which is really also where we are now with this next tier of consciousness, second tier, that is really emerging now. I mean, I believe the reason why you can develop your program and, you know, please, everyone, read the Courageous Mosaic, when you take that and expand it into your new course that it's going to talk about, you know, the relationship with physical body or energy body, ego or soul, what really is the sense of self and how integrated is it, as you were speaking about something with the gorilla, but on a different level, is it integrated with the soul, is it separate, and what about your primal relationships, are they resolved or are they... I would say resolved is, have you accepted that's just been the way they've been? And,
right.
And I think one of my most powerful words for me, was the four-letter words. One is love, okay. Another is next. Another is done.
Yeah.
And, the idea is to be able to pause, to be with, and to become aware, acknowledge, accept, and then just say, okay, been there, done that. Okay, I accept that's the way it's been, with the resource I had then, at the consciousness I had then, and the energy I had then. And, what are we next done? Where do we go from there? But, something, Ralph, we haven't spoken about before. It's more a newer understanding for me. And since, some of what you teach and coach and dialogue, really in different ways, we also described as how to have greater influence, I think. In looking at different ways, I would phrase it as you're an expert on influence and typologies of how to create influence. And influence changes as you go through these different lines as what you want to influence. One of the things I see is that to create an impact in the world, you have to have influence. To influence, you have to be able to accept or value whatever it is you want to change. So if you see someone and you're working with someone, that person is in a lower state, or the person is in a distributive consciousness, for example, at that point, just can you value that serves a purpose, even if it's outgrown? Can you value that distributive area keeps a person one higher than lower, and at least they're alive and still in the game? They're just at first base or in the stadium. They're not running the bases yet, but at least they're in the game. And you first have to value that which you want to shift. And you must bring energy into the system consistent with its nature. And I believe that, again, that's where the two of us really, really have different lenses on the same process, I believe, and that we're both looking to define, well, how do we define the system?
And, I would say that the one philosophy I endorse is this whole notion that stages of consciousness, stages of progression, it's always about including and transcending, transcending and including. You're always honoring, loving, accepting what came before because it's what got you there, but then you transcend it. So you have a respect for people at every stage of consciousness because you've been there too. The other theme is, and I learned a lot from David Hawking's work in the sense of his logarithmic scale of these energies and emotions, and that's where the spirit power is so much more influential, if you will, than ego force. And all you need in one group is to have one person who's operating at that higher level of consciousness. That person, that radiating field of energy, is going to raise everyone up to a higher perspective because it's an engaging process.
And what we're speaking about, the same thing, is that you go from energy neutral, which is about supporting the status quo, keeping the cultural think the way it is, keeping everything going, and energy rich, where you're providing enough energy in the field with others there, and super energy rich, where it affects people, really through time. Ralph, could you give some voice to the concept of an observer and observing the observer, or observing the observer, observing, whatever hit you want to talk about that? Because obviously, you are, when you're looking at even people or assessing different scales, you're observing. You're also observing yourself, observing. And I sense that very often you're observing your observer observing. And can you just give some voice to how that may show up for you?
Yeah, to me that's a very complex construct, because whenever you categorize things, you always set it apart from other things. But bottom line is, there's an observing aspect of self-observation as well as observing what others are doing. There's also participation, where you are actively participating inside yourself in your own creation and development, and you're also participating with other people to bring things about. Again, it's not an either-or. On the integrative dimension, there is an approach that is mutually observing, participatory, both inside and outside, all at the same time. And it's something that you can't exactly put in words, just categorizing it kind of puts it into boxes. But the synergistic approach is when you walk the earth, so to speak, and you're monitoring yourself, you're monitoring others as you're actively participating within your own universe and the universe of others. And that's the best way I can put it. And there are times where you have a particular mission or there's a particular problem, and you may be more the internal observer or the external observer or the internal participant, the external participant. But ultimately, just like the conflict model, you need to have access to all of this, and you pick and choose what is helpful to yourself and others at a given point in time.
You know, it's,
and just like the conflict model, people can sometimes say, well, I come out high when I take the TKI assessment, avoiding or accommodating or compromising. I do that all the time. I see situations as having to stay away from them, or conceding, surrendering, or taking over, or always flipping a coin to determine who gets what. Or I'm always trying to collaborate, even when the issue isn't important. I drive people crazy. And the conflict model teaches us that this is a repertoire of skills. It's energies, it's skills, it's approach. And you're a more resourceful person if you're A, aware of these greater choices, and B, you're effective in choosing which one will suit you and is resourceful for others on a particular moment. And I think the same is the case with whether you're observing, whether you're participating, what kind of energy and emotion you express. It's reading the situation, which is kind of a social emotional intelligence, and being able to be the most resourceful you can be for that moment in time with yourself and with others. It doesn't get any better than that, except when you recognize that, and this is maybe a whole other topic, but the major theme in my work is that systems probably drive 80% of what we experience. We've been conditioned by our systems. And so we can bring awakening to individuals, but meanwhile, they go back and they nurture sick systems. So what does it really mean to look at our systems as recognizing that they are a part of who we are, and therefore we are fully responsible for developing our systems to support our further development, our wholeness, our growth, our evolution.
So then it goes back to the drop of water in the ocean, that basically we are like the Russian dolls that go inside each other. We are fields inside of fields inside of fields. And whatever I think identify with this as part of me, we really are in a dynamic with that. And then the question is, who am I? Am I this? I am the fields also I've identified with, and then I am accountable to that, and therefore I can impact upon that, which is the first, that goes back to the point of having influence or impact. To have impact on our own self, we have to acknowledge, where we are and what we're made of or who we are.
Yeah, I think the most profound development from my book, Courageous Mosaic, in the last 2 years and then developing this online course is the recognition that how we define who we are, what our focus is, if you will, then determines how we approach ourselves and others and the rest of the world.
That's right.
And I have found that most people view their systems as outside themselves, outside my skin-encapsulated ego. It's out there. And if everyone defines their systems out there, who's taking responsibility to change the system? And we can talk about what I mean by system, because that's energy as well as formal documents as well as culture. It's everything out there. But what would it mean for people in an integrative way to say it's not just me versus my systems, it's me and my systems. They're all a part of my self-identity, and therefore I have full responsibility to develop all of that and not just what's within my physical body.
You know, it's interesting because when I overlay the concept of internal, external, so that I didn't hear that, it's so interesting. We speak the same words to have a different meaning to different people. And that, for example, for a person who is what I call external, they must live outside. Everything outside is effective. Everything is inside, but external, anything associated with the sense of self, anything associated with the past, will never really be healed or be whole. For the internal, everything they don't like, they push outside themselves. The reality is the external must find a way of moving further in and blessing what's inside, and the internal must move further out, blessing what's outside. The only thing that's different with internal and external is the direction you're facing. Whatever direction you're facing, you must bless the other way too.
Yes, I would say the danger is on the distributive dimension, you are neither internal or external. You're living out a conditioned life, period, with no choice, no mindfulness. You still have that rot red dot on your forehead, and you really don't even know it's you when you look in a mirror. On the distributive dimension, the danger is that it becomes, am I either an internal or an external? Which is who I am? And therefore, I honor the one, and I dishonor the other. Whereas on
that's
the
right.
integrated...
So I honor that this is my uniqueness, and next, now live my life and bring it... Wherever you are, the idea is to bring it the other way, too. That's because they're both, it's... You start one direction, but eventually you have to take a turn someplace.
Well, that's what the integrative dimension is all about. It's the realization, it's the epiphany that says it's not internal or external. It's both. How can I nurture that seemingly duality into a construct, into a self-identity that gives me greater resources, energy, influence, impact, love, and experience than if I went in one or the other direction?
While acknowledging I have propensity and a gift to one and embracing all.
Absolutely. And I can go back and forth, and I can come up with a synergistic solution, ironically, where the internal-external distinction evaporates into oneness. It becomes an irrelevant paradox. It was
convenient
for the mind to get us going, to have the dialogue, but it merges into unity as we move up to spirit-centric consciousness, as we move up through awaken, as we move up through love, peace, joy, and compassion, so on and so forth. That's when it all merges into one.
And then to the cosmos-centric, beyond the spirit-centric, because, again, the spirit has to come home to something too.
Right. The spirit evolves just as we do. We're all evolving because we are all spirit.
So, you know, it's I have a question. When you call to the courageous mosaic, why did you call it that?
Well, first, I went to courage because not just Hawking's work in terms of moving from ego force to spirit power, which is where the dialogue begins. It's also because it takes courage to have this discussion, to face things, to move forward. It takes courage to break out of a conditioned life, period, because there's so many reinforcers that are keeping people down. So it takes courage. And I try to represent through my book that there had to be courage to even write the book, let alone to have experienced what's in the book, and then to share it. The mosaic, and you'll appreciate this, Donnie, has many aspects to it. You'll find one very, very funny. But one aspect of mosaic is it's looking at all the little pieces and seeing the puzzle, the pieces, the parts, the fragments, the whole. It's always an issue of, on the distributive dimension, making distinctions, and then on the integrative dimension, looking for what is whole, what are the patterns. Seeing, and then, of course, transcending the pattern. So that's the mosaic. When you think of a picture of a mosaic, all the little pieces, but as you break away from it, if you look at it, then you see the artwork, you see the image, you see whatever is being represented as a whole. But mosaic, to me, is also in a sense of mosaic law, and it goes back to Moses and the burning bush.
I was waiting for that part. And we call that because the... as people at programs develop what's called the soul style, the basic core that really unifies you, regardless of what your identity is or your mind says, and part of that is in Ralph's there is a burning bush. So that's really a key aspect.
Which I developed at one of your Ultima programs way back when.
Back in Mexico.
Yeah.
Yes.
I should also emphasize the subtitle, which is really more a descriptor of what the book is about. The subtitle of The Courageous Mosaic is Awakening Society, Systems, and Soul.
Which is really what you're about. You know, this something, a theme I hear through our conversation is, you know, when you talk about the mind, you talk about the ego and the limitation, the amount of energetic associated with that, okay, when you really go look at that, what really happens is we're dealing with the mind, one of the key things in the mind is that it generally wants to create stability to reinforce its self-concept, which is illusionary anyway, but that's a whole other conversation. And the idea of the soul is that it wants to, or its driving force to create instability in the system, because most of our challenges of life are the fact that we have too much illusion of stability when indeed everything is changing. So the real power of soul to make a difference, impact, is it not only has a soul intelligence, does it create instability, but it has the power to carry through on it.
I don't know if we have the time to do this, but in the other thing that emerged from my book to this online course is these four foundational conflicts. And one of them is the question, and it's purposely phrased to first fit on the distributive dimension. Of course, if you were on the protective dimension, you wouldn't even be having the dialogue. But on the distributive dimension, the question is, are you governed by your ego or your soul? And I list for people that the ego is primarily concerned about safety, security, achievement, glory, fame, longevity, immortality, and the like. Whereas the soul wants to know, why am I here? Why was I born? What is my piece in the puzzle? What is my special calling? What am I here to accomplish? What is my mission? And those are two very different perspectives on how you should live your life, and they reflect all the different voices we hear outside of us and inside of us concerning how we should be living our life. But on the distributive dimension, you see, it's either or. And there are many traditions that suggest we should either discard or destroy the ego. And my sense of transcend and include is say, no, we don't have to discard, we have to honor. The question becomes, how can we move up the integrative dimension so the ego and soul can be on the same path? can be on the same path. And that is where there's synergy.
That's the big gig.
By the way,
mosaic, you know, I was looking up the some definitions of mosaic, you know, in, and all relating to Moses, the writings, the laws, and principles attributed to him. But I didn't realize it also comes from a Latin, Latin and Greek versions that also refer to the muse. Or reformation. A museum is from the same Middle English root.
And
a museum really is a muse or a shrine that allows for a reformation or, say, reorganization. I think it's pretty cool. The term itself is no accident, Ralph, no accident. You burning bush. So if there's one thing I could say, including this, okay, as the burning bush, at the laws of Moses, the laws of whatever it is of the carrier of truth, the burning bush, what one truth or one rule or one law or one thing would you say, it would be a central truth, law, rule that around all of that, everything else just seems to fall in place?
That we have been conditioned to define a self-identity, whether it was conscious or not, that is a very limited perspective on who we are in the universe, and that the journey to wholeness is as much the purpose of expanding our self-identity to really include a much broader perspective, including our surrounding systems, ultimately the entire planet, the entire universe, and that will allow us to address problems like hunger, disease, poverty, helplessness, hopelessness, war, violence, all that we complain about in the media. That higher perspective is what's needed if we are going to, quote-unquote, save the species and give everyone the potential to be who they really are.
And that is really the basis of the shift that's happening in consciousness now. That is the promise of the integrative, collaborative view of the world, and where we use both bound and unbound energies.
And what I think is really exciting, Donnie, is in my course, on one page, I listed the major revolutions in the history of the planet, so to speak, or actually the universe, starting with the physical revolution, the Big Bang, 14 billion years ago, and then life emerged on Earth about 3 billion years ago, and then we gave rise to organizations and institutions with the agricultural and industrial revolution, and then the information revolution was probably around maybe just 20, 30 years ago with the Internet, with PCs that solely interconnected people across the planet instantaneously. And I'm saying that now we're on to the consciousness revolution. And that's why I think these times are so exciting, because we're shifting from the information revolution, which that interconnectivity gave rise to the notion that we're really united, but now it's happening at the level of consciousness. And these revolutions have been accelerating. And we're at the time now where paradigm shifts are going to be occurring in months and weeks, and not in hundreds of years. That's why this is so exciting, because consciousness and energy, subtle energy, does not obey the laws of time and space.
That's right. Well, Todd, and that is a key aspect. I am now teaching in my highest level teachings I give to people on what mastery is about, and it's looking beyond the fourth dimension of time and space, and in the fifth dimension, which exists at right angle to fourth, it said that every possible outcome exists. Time exists as more than just two directions, multiple directions there, and that basically from that perspective, we have that as a driving force that we can only see in our three dimensions. So if someone, while you're sitting there, someone just from a higher dimension just change your clothes while you're sitting there. Well, look how magical this was. Well, if you saw how the other dimension was doing, you'd say it makes perfect sense. But one of the key things is that we marvel. We keep marveling at the higher dimensional influence on this dimension and realize that that is where we will be living not too far from the future, in the future.
It's so close, I don't think we can even imagine it.
Right. And thanks, buddy, for being part of helping that to happen where we're aware. Actually, it has happened. It's a matter of getting enough of the human field of consciousness to recognize it and live consistent with it.
Right, and it is spreading. It's all bubbling up. I see it. I experience it all over the place. That old Chinese expression of "May you live in interesting times." Boy, we've got it in space.
We sure are. Well, thanks so much for the time, and I'm really looking forward to sharing this with people and me personally also diving into your course. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Donnie.
I love you, buddy.
I love you, too. Bye-bye.